Are you so tired of the insanity going on in your house where it seems like we keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results, and you feel completely powerless to change the dance, to change the patterns? We keep stepping on each other's toes, and it's like, when is this going to end? Well, in today's episode, Sarah and I are going to tackle that topic because it is a fundamental part of our parenting, that the follow-up is the key component to making change, not only with our parenting, but also in our marriage. So if you're married, if you've got kids, if you're wanting to change even relationships with friends, we're going to walk you through how we do that with five key concepts that helped us shift from lecturing parents who just shamed after every conflict to parents who felt empowered to actually change the dance and saw beautiful outcomes from it. So come join us on our conversation today.
Welcome to The Art of Raising Humans.
The Art of Raising Humans is a podcast designed to support, equip, and encourage parents on how to create long-lasting, deeply connected relationships with their kids that's free from fear and shame. Come join us on the journey. Hello and welcome to The Art of Raising Humans. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Sarah.
And before we jump into today's topic, we're still really after episode 100. We were talking a lot about asking people to go and leave reviews, leave comments, still want to reach that 100. We're not quite there, okay? And so we want people, if you're listening right now and you're loving the content, finding it helpful, please jump right on to whatever platform you're listening to and please leave us a review. It's super helpful so other parents can find us and get the support that we're wanting. And we really want to hit that 100, don't we?
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You sound super excited about it.
I know.
So we really appreciate all the comments. We really appreciate when you give us feedback about how it's helping. So all that stuff is really great too. So today's topic, Sarah, what we want to jump into is something that I hear a lot from parents. Okay. A lot of times parents, they keep doing the same thing over and over again, mm-hmm. and they're hoping things will change.
Mm-hmm. And they're trying really hard. I think all of as parents, we're trying really hard and we think, okay, I've got to, stay consistent. I've got to do, this is the thing. I've got to do it really well. I'm missing a piece.
And well, because we all know that's the definition of insanity, right? And I think as a parent, when we've been there, that we keep trying the same thing going, when's this going to change? Like you feel like you're going insane because you want that behavior to shift. You're wanting something even, sometimes it's the behavior in yourself, right?
Yeah.
Is you're wanting to stop yelling. You're wanting to, be more peaceful. You're wanting whatever that thing is you're trying to shift. And it just seems like you keep trying things. So a lot of times we see parents that come for help and they'll say, oh, we've tried everything, or we've already tried that and it didn't work.
They've tried really hard and they're on this cycle that just keeps repeating.
And so today, sir, I wanted us to hit the thing that is not happening. And for good reasons, there's reasons why they're not doing it, is the follow-up. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is the follow-up that what we want to do today is give you some tried and true methods to help make change more likely to happen in your family, okay? Are you frustrated and overwhelmed as a parent? Are you wanting to stop using fear-based techniques and punishments such as spanking and timeouts, but you don't know what else to do? Do you want a positive and joyful connection with your children? We want to help you. We love coaching parents and helping give them all the tools they need to raise kids that are happy, respectful, and have self-control. If you are ready to take that step, then reach out to me at kyle@artofraisinghumans.com. Look forward to getting a chance to meet with you and see if you'd be a good fit for our program. What we know about change is that change only happens when you do the reflection. Like something I like to talk about, Sarah, is a lot of times in sports, the way even athletes change is athletes have to watch the game film. Mm-hmm. That they've got to be disciplined. I mean, the best athletes are really, really disciplined about watching the game film of the games they did great in the games they didn't do so great, right? Like they're in the habit of constantly doing that, reflecting upon it, not only on their own, but with someone else, right? Mm-hmm. Typically with a coach or with other players, and they reflect upon how to make that game different in the future. Now, if you have
breaking it down, this is what I did, this is how it was received, or this is what the opponent did. And so they're breaking down all the little pieces and reviewing that so they can make change.
Yeah. So in order to make change, self-reflection is pivotal. It's crucial. And not only in ourselves, but in our kids. And that's actually a habit we want our kids to get into. We want our kids to be disciplined and feeling like they can self-reflect. Why is that important? Well, we know from the brain science that as we self-reflect, I actually strengthen my prefrontal cortex. So then I can become more self-aware, right? And so what we know from psychology and counseling, that's actually the whole point of why you do it, is to raise your self-awareness. So then you can feel empowered to then change it. You know, if I'm not willing to look at it, I can't change it.
Right. And that's and really, there's another word we all use for it. It's just maturing,
yes.
Right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
part
yeah.
of a process. If we don't ever look back on how, even in business and any walk in life, if you don't look back on, well, this is what I tried to do, or this is what we did, and how did it go, and what could I do different next time? That whole part of the brain that plans, that evaluates, is pulling the pieces apart, that strategizes, that thing has to be exercised, it has to be built. It's not something we're actually just born
yes,
with.
Yeah.
We have to build it. And so it's a skill. So you have to intentionally say, okay, I'm going to sit down just like you do with your panel of coworkers and think, how did that marketing strategy go? Let's reflect on that. Let's figure out what we want to do next time. We need to do the same thing in any area in life.
Yeah. So anytime we're helping parents, one of the first questions we ask, if a parent says, hey, this happened and this thing blew up and there was this conflict and it really sucked, I'll say, did you follow up? And I would say, Sarah, probably 7 out of 10 times, there's been no follow up. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the problem with there being no follow up is, what did we learn then from the conflict? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we did learn things. So yeah. If you don't follow up, what's some of the things you do learn?
If you don't follow up?
Yeah.
Well, I would say you actually just get in the habit of just moving on.
Yeah.
And then you're sort of hoping it doesn't happen.
Crossing
again.
Your fingers. Yep.
Or, you know, you just learn to move on. Just don't keep looking at it. Hope it goes better next time, instead of in a space of calm, rethinking it.
This may be a dumb example, Sarah, but I'm thinking even like sometimes when I go to the grocery store and you've put like a list of things you want me to buy at Target or Walmart or something.
It's a really great list.
So there's this list, and then I'll go there and there'll be some confusion about things
like,
you want.
What kind of cheese?
Exactly. What kind of cheese are you talking about?
How or much other, cheese?
Yeah. And so if we don't, as a couple, follow up and say, hey, it would really help me if you communicated it this way or you put that note there, because I'm kind of confused. Because obviously lots of times, Sarah, you know better than I do what it is you're looking for, because maybe you're specifically cooking that meal, right? So then I'm going getting the item, but you in your mind imagine the item and I'm not able to imagine it. So through the years, I mean, we've been married almost 22 years, we've fine-tuned that more and more and more, right? To where that list makes more and more sense to me when I go.
This is an ongoing conversation.
But that has happened because of the follow-up. You know, if I just go to the store and I get upset about the list and my confusion, and I come home and I'm just upset about it and we never talk about it, mm-hmm. that list is going to continue looking the same way, right? We eventually have to have a discussion about how we could tweak
well,
that list.
Without the intentional conversation, you're hoping that maybe I figure out some details to add without you just saying, hey, this would help me if you did this and this. And I realize what you don't know, because it seems real obvious to
yeah.
me. They're not on there because I think you don't cook a lot. So mm-hmm, you don't, mm-hmm. you know, what I think is a given isn't something you know, but
yeah.
I don't know that. So you tell me, I learn, we learn from each other because we have conversations about it. Instead of hoping that you've filled in the blanks, I've filled in the blanks, and we're coming together.
And I know this sounds silly, like it's such a simple issue,
yeah.
but it is a big issue that can start breeding resentment in a marriage. And I see this
well, those
no
things
different.
Stack up.
Yeah.
I mean, at first it's just a simple grocery list, but then it's all these other things. If you're not in that habit, they all start to build up and create a problem in any relationship.
Well, I'm thinking even that's what we're saying is the problem. If you don't follow up, you do learn something. And the thing we would learn in that example is we just don't talk about it. We come home and we hope things are better, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas really we want to, as parents and as couples, to be able to guide what we learn from the conflict.
Well,
you know?
And I'll back it up just a second. From that, I could start thinking things like, what's wrong with him? It's so obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, if this is what we're eating, this is the kind of cheese you need. Who doesn't? I could start to have these I mean, that's a silly example, but I could start to have judgments. Those things do happen. You could have judgments about she doesn't even care. She's just sending me out there.
Yep.
So I'm just making
she's
this
she's bad
up.
At communication.
Yeah.
And like,
yep, she doesn't yep. care that I'm spending my time going yep. to the store for dinner mm-hmm. and she can't just tell me what kind of cheese.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, that just we're humans and those thoughts start to happen and we don't have any clarity without the conversation. We don't have clarity. I'm running on assumptions and you're running on assumptions.
I love that you point that out because that's the real goal of all communication, right? Is eventually we know we've communicated well if we understand each other better and are more clear on what the other person is wanting, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so that's that's a great way of summing up the follow-up, right? Is through whatever time, if there's friction, if there's conflict, or even if it goes really well, like there's so many times, Sarah, where for a teenager, the teenager will say to me, man, my parent has really been changing. I like how they did X, Y, and Z. Or last time they typically would have yelled at me, but they didn't. And I'll say to the kid, did you follow up with them? And they're like, what do you mean? Did you tell them you liked it? And the kid will be like, no, I didn't. Dude, if you want them to keep doing that, maybe tell them it was awesome, you know? And then the parent, I told them, like, no parent is going to get mad at you saying, wow, thank you for talking to me that way. I liked that. Because then the parent will go, oh, you liked that? Great. This is working, you know? Mm-hmm. And so even
I can do that again. Because if you don't know it worked or you don't know that that was real successful for that other person, you don't necessarily have it in your mind to intentionally repeat it.
Yep. And so we're talking here about in another way the phrase is how to change the dance, right? Or if you liked the dance, how to keep the dance going, okay?
Yeah.
So now almost every time I say this to a parent, I'll say, did you follow up? And then they say, no. And I'll say, well, how come? How come you didn't follow up? And almost always they'll talk about this hesitancy or this resistance from the kid being willing to have that conversation. Right? Mm-hmm. They're not receptive. They're not open. All right. So mm-hmm. if anybody's listening right now, I'm sure you're like, yeah, it's exactly. We tried that. It didn't work, Kyle. We tried to do the follow up and they just shut down or they just say, I don't know. Or there's no real, it's not typically bringing more closeness, more mm-hmm. understanding. It's
stressful, very stressful.
Yeah. And then the kid is just like mad that you brought it up. And mm-hmm. so the almost like the kid will just explode again mm-hmm. because so we want to talk about there are ways to follow up that make it more likely you'll be successful doing this. But first, I want to talk about what is it that causes a kid more often than not to not want to follow up. So what's some reasons a kid wouldn't want to follow up?
Oh, because it just feels like, great, we get to rehash how terrible I am again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're just layering on even more shame or how upset they are at me or maybe they actually feel bad and they don't want that brought back up. It doesn't feel good to have someone say, remember how you messed up? No, I don't know anyone who likes that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I'm going to get in trouble even more or again.
Yeah.
All of those things, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how in the sports world, because I didn't do that, but when they review tape, of course they're going to be pointing out what they did wrong.
Sure.
There's a piece of vulnerability there no matter what the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to relationship, there's a huge amount of vulnerability having that dredged back up.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to let that lay there.
So in summing that up, lots of times a kid won't want to do follow-up because the kid doesn't think it's helpful. You know, the kid doesn't trust that this is going to be something good for our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times a kid is doing, like you said, because of that shame and they don't want to rehash it, but also they think this doesn't seem to help our relationship either. So you're saying this is more distance. Yes.
Yeah. It's honestly scary.
Yep.
Very vulnerable. Do they even feel safe to have that follow-up?
And I'd even ask it in marriages for those who are listening. How safe do you feel in having the follow-up? Mm-hmm. Well, says couples want to avoid it too because they don't want to. They think it's going to turn into a big yelling argument. It's just going to cause us to resent each other more. So we just forget about it and
brush
move
it under
on.
The rug. That's a saying for a reason because we all feel safer sometimes just brushing it under the rug and letting it stay there.
And another reason why, Sarah, is I think parents slip into the mistake. And I know I did this. This is the reason, you know, we learned from this, you know, so everyone who's listening, I wrote these notes out of my own experience of I would slip into lecturing, would definitely slip into monologuing or shaming.
Yeah.
Right. And I noticed that with Abby in particular, as she was getting older, and I'd have the follow-up and be like, oh, these follow-ups are so important. Let's learn. And I think every parent's been there where Abby's looking at me and her eyes are just glazed over.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would feel myself getting more upset and be like, are you listening to me? Do you hear a thing I'm saying? And then you know how kids will do it when you say, repeat back what I'm saying. Then the kid can repeat back almost everything you said. But you're like, I don't think you're learning the depth of what I'm trying to convey here, you know?
Then the very thing that she was afraid of with follow-up is happening.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
And things are breaking apart more instead of coming together, which is the point of what we're talking about in follow-up. It's to actually heal things and repair and bring things together.
Learn and grow, right?
Not re-lecture, yep. Re-punish, redo all the things that really happen.
So I want everyone who's listening to understand that the reason why anybody, whether it's a couple or it's a kid, your spouse, whatever you're talking to, or a friend, the reason why somebody's hesitant to follow up and do any kind of learning is no different than, like Sarah was saying, that athlete. If that athlete thinks they're just going to get shamed, lectured, monologue, if they think it's just going to be a whole thing about how I stink and you're better than me, all those, nobody's going to be receptive to that. Everybody is going to resist that. And so I think in the process of making this a habit in a family, the parent needs to have a clear picture of what they want instead of focusing on what they don't want. You know, they need to have a clear picture of what is the point of this follow-up? You know, mm-hmm. What are we trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
You know, and I think initially, you definitely don't want it to be a win-lose discussion. You know,
definitely.
You want to focus on how can this be a win-win?
Yes.
How can we both grow and change? This isn't about changing the kid. It isn't even about changing you. It's about changing the interaction between you and the kid. Mm-hmm. And as soon as a kid knows that, like I'm telling you, every kid I help at the private practice, every kid I get to spend time with, the kid wants that.
Yeah.
The kid wants that conversation.
Well, they want a good relationship.
Yeah.
Even if it feels like it's broken apart so much that they don't care anymore, they do. They do care. Everybody wants great relationships. Mm-hmm. They don't want to come home and there's tension and anger and all this stuff just sitting there. They want a good relationship.
Yeah.
And we have to create that. We have to take that step and create a safe space for them to realize, I know maybe we've done this other thing before, but we're doing something new now. And mm-hmm, it's safe, mm-hmm. And I'm listening to you.
Yep.
And this is a mutual relationship discussion,
yep.
Feedback. Yeah.
Well, and so think about it. That's what you're doing. I like that metaphor of a dance, honey, because it's like you are changing the dance with the kid. I mean, mm-hmm. you're actually mm-hmm. going to say, hey, I know the music we used to listen to, and I know yes. the dance steps we used to do,
yeah.
But I want to actually try some new music, and I want to try some new dance steps. Now, but in that metaphor, the reason why I think it's so appropriate, one, it's this cool relationship metaphor of us flowing together, mm-hmm. But it also, if anybody's ever tried dancing with, I'm not that good at it, so if anyone's ever tried dancing, it's hard to learn new steps, you know? I mean, if I learn one line dance in a group, that's fun. It feels cool once you get it down. But to learn a whole new one, well, you kind of do get, it gets a little easier as you learn more and more. But each time, you got to be focused. You got to be intentional. You got to learn the steps. You got to practice them together, right? And so when you invite the kid into changing the dance, that's what the goal of the follow-up is we're going to talk about how to do this dance different.
Well, and as I think about it, I love the dance too, because if you're dancing with people, a partner or many of them, yep. The dance isn't going to go well if somebody's kind of pushing everyone, right? It has to be something where we're coming together. Everyone feels like we're coming together. It's safe to come together. If you're trusting a leader in a dance, you know, if there's two of you and you're dancing and you're trusting that leader, it's not because they're shoving you around and, you know, it's really because you're coming together.
Yes.
And everyone is coming together.
And we've all agreed to come together to change
this dance. And you're feeling safe, so to speak, to do that, right?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And so here's what I did. Sarah, I want your input on this. I know I really feel like I needed to change that dance because my intensity, my frustration and coming into the follow-up, like I said, started to kind of turn Abby off initially. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, man, we've got three kids and this is already happening. I don't want this to be a pattern to where we start to get into this habit of we don't follow up because we're all afraid about that conversation, you know, and I could tell the kids were kind of apprehensive or hesitant to have that, you know? So what I needed to do was I needed to put some boundaries on how I was going to follow up. I really needed to put boundaries on me. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to show up. I wanted to show that it would be a positive and helpful interaction. It doesn't need to be a serious conversation. Mm-hmm. It can actually be lighthearted and fun. You know, so like I'm even thinking like in the sports scenario, I'm sure all the follow-ups with the coaches or when they're watching, it isn't just always really, everyone's really serious. I'm sure there are some lighthearted moments. So I want everyone listening to understand I'm not talking about this really serious eye-to-eye.
You know, probably not going to work very well if you take
We're going to try to take the energy out of it and just be able to make it a more comfortable thing where we're both able to be in our prefrontal cortex. We're both believing we're for each other. So one of the things I did, Sarah, was I purposely, you know, started this one. This is just a technique I tried that worked really well. And I encourage a lot of parents to help is since I am such a big talker and I can monologue and I can lecture is I wanted to show Abby that I wasn't going to do that. That wasn't my intent. My intent was to understand her. So how does me talking the whole time help me understand her? It doesn't really accomplish that. So I thought, man, I need to, I want to be more curious, you know? So I put a limit, and this is just a made up limit, but I said, I'm just going to ask her three questions. So in the follow up, I said, Abby, I want to try something different. I want to just, whenever we have a conflict, I do want to learn from it. And I'm just going to ask you three questions. And that's all I'm going to ask you. And it doesn't mean I didn't have more questions. I had tons more questions. And my three questions sometimes stunk. They weren't even like great questions. It's not like they're the three perfect questions.
Right.
But they were three questions that I thought could help me better understand her. And I thought, even if she never owns anything that she did in this moment, that's not the point. The point is retraining ourselves in how to do this and show her that she can trust me, that I am really just wanting to understand where she's coming from, you know? So I would say to Abby, hey, I'm just going to ask three questions. And all I'm asking from you is to really take a moment to give me thoughtful answers, you know? And man, the first time we did it, Sarah, the way I knew it was successful was at the end of it, I asked her the three questions and then we were going into a store. So I actually did this on our way into the store. And I said, hey, I just have three questions about something that happened today when you and I got mad at each other. And so she said, okay. So I asked the three questions at the end. I said, how did that feel? You know, did you like that? And she said, I did. I felt like you really cared about what I thought rather than just wanting me to care about what you thought. And I realized that's what I'd been doing the whole time.
Yeah.
I'd been modeling to her that I just wanted her to care about what I thought.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't really curious about what was going on in her inner world.
Yeah. So I love that one. You set the stage. Like, I think that's really important for parents to know. I think sometimes we feel not at the mercy of our kids, but if they're real upset or in a really hard space, you can feel like you don't have much power there. Mm-hmm. But I love that you actually kind of demonstrate, no matter what the situation is, you're not waiting for your child. You can actually start that change. You have a lot more power sometimes than I think we realize.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't feel like it. And then two, that it wasn't the perfect set of questions. It wasn't the perfect scenario. You're just like, I'm going to change this.
Yes.
And I'm just going to give it a go. And so you intentionally set three questions, set the stage. We'll do it in a safe space of just driving somewhere, you know, not just like sit down, let's have this serious conversation. Yep. But so you did that. And then at the end, she felt closer to you because you just listened.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think as parents, we feel this anxiety to make sure the kid got the lesson, that the kid is going to change, they're going to do better or whatever it might be. We're really worried about that because we see it long. We're taking this one moment and looking to their entire future.
I know, we're flash forwarding way.
And that relationship is your most powerful thing. The ability to be, for her to be heard, for any child to be heard and be able to express themselves, that's going to get you much further than feeling like, yes, they heard my big moral point or whatever it might have been. Yeah. That's not going to, kids often can tell you all the rules, all the things. And that doesn't mean they're going to do them. It's the relationship that's the driving force. And you built the relationship.
Yeah.
And that can be scary because we feel like, but did she get, did the punishment, did the lesson, did the whatever happen? But that's not going to get you as far. We see that time and time again because you see this cycle happen in families over and over. And they're punishing or they're lecturing or they're, and that happens over and over without the change.
Yeah.
The relationship in anybody, in my coworker relationship, my relationship with you, that relationship is the thing that matters. And you built that by having that follow-up.
Well, and what I wanted to do too, Sarah, and I'll give them a quick, I want to give our listeners a quick example of what it would look like, is I wanted to make sure I'm modeling a couple of things that I want to understand you. So I'm going to model that. Why is that important? Because I want her to understand me too, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm, if inevitably, I do want her to understand my perspective, but I'm going to first model understanding her perspective. And then I want her to be able to take responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. So then I'm going to model that as well. So some of the questions, these are just examples, is I might, before I even ask the main questions, I might just say, hey, did you like how that went today? Mm-hmm. Right? That might be a initial opening question. And then the kid will say, no. And I'll say, okay, cool. Could I ask you three questions about the events, right? So I'm just making up these three questions. But so I might say something like, what didn't you like about it? Right. And then I'm causing them to do what? Reflect upon what happened and what they did or did not like about it. So that's a prefrontal cortex activity. Then second, I might ask, is there anything you feel like I could have done differently in that moment, or you would have liked me to have done differently? You know, and then once again, now the kid typically is more willing to have that conversation because that's different than just jumping right into what could you have done differently? Yes. How could you have changed that? Yeah. I'm a model for you that I'm curious what you think I could have. And sometimes the kid actually has a really great perspective and like, yes, they'll be like, dang, that would have actually worked a lot better. Right. So then they'll tell me and maybe I'll say in that moment, hey, will you forgive me for that thing I did? Right. Maybe the kid didn't like how I yelled at them or how I judged them or criticized them, whatever it is. Right. So then I just say, hey, and then I'd say, maybe my third question is there anything you could have done differently? Yeah. And so then I just see how that goes. So maybe that third question, I'm taking a little stab at it to see how willing they are to move the shame out of the way and reflect, not that they're a bad kid, but that they could have just done it better, you know?
And well, you did it first.
I did it first. Yeah. And then I'm see that. And then sometimes the parents say, well, then what if they say no? Then I just say, I had some thoughts on that. Could I share a couple things I would have liked to have done differently, right? Mm-hmm. And then once again, see if the kid's open and receptive. Because if you share that information, they're not open and receptive, it's not going to help you anyway. It's either going to back up their poor opinion of themselves or they're just going to ignore it.
Yeah, I would say if this is the first time you're doing that and you've had a very different dynamic, they're very likely to say nope. Because they're like, I don't trust this yet. Yeah. As you repeat it, though, you build that trust and eventually they might, and they'll test the waters. They'll pick something really minor.
Yeah.
I could have, you know, they'll say something that you're like, well, that's the thing. There's all this. I have a long list of things you could have done. But they'll throw out that and they're just testing and they're just seeing, is this really safe?
Yeah.
And can I really lean into it?
Yep.
As you model that over and over, they'll feel safer. And then the first time they do it, if they're watching you to see how did you, are you going to now jump on me about that thing?
Yeah. Did you use that against me? Safe? Did you react to that? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if you bring it up the next, remember how you said you could have done, you have to be very, very safe. If you're going to hold that vulnerability of them owning something that stays on that table, you're grateful. And that's how they're going to learn because they're going to be feel like, okay, I can step into that a little bit more. I can lean in further next time.
Yeah.
But they're going to, you know, you got to be patient with it and keep putting yourself
you're building
out
trust.
There.
You can trust this. Yeah. And even the word I was thinking of as you said that, that's a third thing you're modeling is vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You're actually risking and being vulnerable at what they're going to say to you. And then you're asking them to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And too often I want to, if whoever's listening to this is that's why typically your spouse or your kids is hesitant or resistant to these conversations because they don't want to be vulnerable because it's risky. Okay. So I want to leave them with these five nuggets. Okay. These five ways of switching your thinking. If you're not doing follow-up because you've been like, hey, that doesn't work. I'm telling you, it's the only way things are going to change. So there's five things I wrote down that I really feel like I needed to start believing to change these dynamics. Okay. So number one is you got to believe your voice matters. You have the power to change the pattern.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're doubting that at all, I want you to be rest assured your kids care what you have to say. That's actually why they're hesitant to have the conversation with you because your words matter. Maybe in the past, the words have turned into shaming and lecture and they don't want that to hurt them anymore. Okay. So number one, your voice matters. Number two, you don't have to wait for your kid to change. Yeah. I think you kind of alluded to that earlier, Sarah, but I don't have to sit back and just hold, you know, cross
don't
my fingers.
Don't sit back. Yeah. Put yourself out there.
Exactly. If you wait for the kid to change, I'm telling you, the kid is waiting for you to change. So the kid's
going. And regardless of whether they change or not, that shouldn't be your point.
Exactly.
It shouldn't be to just get them. It work on you.
Yes. Yeah. Make the change you have control over, which is yourself. Mm-hmm. So the third one is have a clear picture of success. What do you want it to look like? So in the follow-up, before you go in, what does success look like? Because most of the times also when I ask about follow-up, Sarah, they only know what they don't want it to look like, but they struggle with articulating what they actually want it to look like. I mean, they basically just want the kid to stop doing that rather than, but what is you actually want the kid to do different? You know? Yeah. So if you don't like that the kid hit their brother, well, they did that because they were mad and they thought that was the best way to communicate it. So what's a better way to communicate that? You know, so you gotta, the whole point of the follow-up is to guide them, just like in the sports metaphor. If I don't want the guy throwing the football that direction or kicking the soccer ball, I've got to tell him where to kick it. Mm-hmm. You know, the goal was to kick it over here. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Number four
in a football, you wouldn't be like, don't miss the ball. You'd be like, catch the ball.
That's right.
And then I would teach them how to catch the ball, right? I wouldn't use negatives. I would use positives. Yes.
And number four is believe that your child wants to do it better. I think that that's a lot of the demotivation over, you know, instead of doing the follow-up, they believe the kid, you know, somehow doesn't want to change, doesn't want to do it better.
I
believe the kid does. The kid is actually wanting to make this ending better. They want to co-create with you a better outcome.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of there's all kinds of studies about even school teachers, what they believe to be true about a student and then that student's performance. So it's very true in relationships. Even if you don't always feel that way, you want to move in the direction of believing in your child, believing in the relationship, believing in to go that direction versus, nope, they're never gonna, they're not this. They're,
And because you won't follow up. What's the point?
Yeah.
And then the last one
and
is.
And they'll feel that from you.
Buy into the idea, please, that follow-up is a key component to change. It is necessary. We've got to review and reflect, not to rehash it, not to beat a dead horse. We've all been there with people who
don't do that.
No, I've been that person. We don't need to do it. We're not talking about beating a dead horse. We're talking about looking at it with open hands, reflecting on it, and then co-creating a different outcome. Mm-hmm. All right. So I hope this conversation was helpful to all the listeners. If you are not doing follow-up, if it's driving you insane how nothing seems to be changing, please listen to this with your spouse, share it with friends, and start doing this with your kids because they desperately want to do it better with you. So I hope this really empowers you to take that step forward and just really enjoy you listening to us today.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate you.
The Art of Raising Humans podcast should not be considered or used as counseling, but for educational purposes only.